Well, British Prime Minister David Cameron is in Algeria today for meetings on that attack and hostage crisis at that gas refinery last week that killed more than 50 people, including Britons and Americans. Cameron called the attack part of the generational struggle against Al-Qaeda in North Africa. He said we face an existential terrorist threat from extremists. Couple that with the fact that the U.S. is reportedly getting ready to establish a drone base in Northwest Africa to track Al-Qaeda. Well, the question becomes, how big is that existential threat? We want to spend a few minutes today with someone who's been exploring answers. Jason Burke is South Asia correspondent for The Guardian. He's written two books on terrorism, including the 9/11 wars. He takes a look at Al-Qaeda in a recent article. In fact, it's called Al-Qaeda, How Great is the Terrorism Threat to the West Now? And Jason joins us from his base in Delhi, India. Jason, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Well, you're not the only one who's referenced this language that David Cameron used, because it was so much like the language used by George W. Bush or former Prime Minister Tony Blair after the 9/11 attacks, the idea of this global existential threat. But you point out almost immediately that in the last decade, most policymakers have been saying, well, maybe not so much a global threat as local, you know, these local attacks that we've seen. What's your sense of what the Prime Minister said?
The existential threat bit, I think, is hugely exaggerated. I mean, to say something is an existential threat implies that it could damage in a, not just a fundamental way, but an irrevocable way, our societies, indeed, you know, as the term implies, threaten their existence. Now, we heard that sort of language in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, and in a sense it was much more justified then. It certainly isn't anywhere near justified now. I mean, I don't think there's any sense that Islamic militants today pose an existential threat to our societies. You know, you could imagine a range of the most appalling nightmare scenarios, another 9/11, for example, that would change us, that would damage us, but it would not destroy our societies and our way of life. So I think the idea of there being an existential threat is simply exaggerated. I also don't think it's helpful, because I think any kind of exaggeration of the threat posed by Islamic militants plays directly into what they want to do, the aim of terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. The aim of that tactic is to terrorize, to create an irrational threat, and particularly to undermine the sense among citizens that the state can protect them. So in a sense, you've got a moment here where the Prime Minister of the UK is saying, this is an existential threat, we have to deal with it, but we have to deal with it over generations, and we have to deal with it as a global element. And that second element is equally problematic, because if there's one thing we've learned over the last 10 years, it's that aggregating all the various elements of modern radical Islam doesn't help. It doesn't help analytically, because in fact there are huge differences between, let's say, the Al-Qaeda hardcore senior leadership up in Pakistan on the Afghan-Pakistani frontier and a ragtag group in, let's say, for the sake of argument, northern Mali. The other problem with creating this idea of a global threat is, again, it feeds the narrative that the militants themselves, the extremists themselves, want to put out.
Right.
The militants want to seem more powerful, and they want to seem like they're united and that they're posing this kind of global, civilizational, existential.
We remember after the Arab Spring, Al-Qaeda was quick to try to rush in and take credit there when they had literally nothing to do with the protests in the streets there. But I just want to back you up for just a second to the one thing that I think everybody wants to know. You said we don't really see this as an existential threat the way the 9/11 attacks were felt to be in that moment. You said you can imagine a plane attack again. One can imagine a plane attack again, but we've seen that it wouldn't destroy our society. But I want you to tell us, are people imagining a plane attack again? That's the one thing people want to know. Can we, you know, as we watch attacks on, as terrible as they were, this attack on this gas refinery, can we draw a line from that to there is another plane attack being planned for the U.S.? How do we know?
We don't, is the answer. The point is that there are definitely people who would love to pull off another 9/11, another plane attack. It may even be that there are some who actually have the capability of doing something like that. There have been a number of bomb plots emanating, particularly from the Yemen, where there's one very competent bomb maker who is causing a lot of problems for Western security services. But the overall point is that looking across the global picture of these very disparate Islamic groups, how many actually have the capability to plan and organize and execute an operation like 9/11? And the answer is not very many. I mean, one of my points is that using the rhetoric of 2002, 2003, this idea of there being an existential global threat is simply not an accurate representation of where we are now compared with where we were then. I mean, back in that period, we were coming out of several years where there had been a coherent Al-Qaeda group based in Afghanistan with a very substantial infrastructure, with a number of senior, veteran, highly competent commanders led by a charismatic and, in a sense, visionary figure who were protected by a regime, the Taliban, and were able to put all that together to develop a very significant terrorist capability. Now, we are just simply not in that position now. In fact, the hardcore of Al-Qaeda has been very heavily degraded. The camps, the training establishments that are available to Al-Qaeda's senior leadership are limited, certainly in comparison to what they had in the 1999, 2000, 2001 period. The main point is the threat posed now compared to the threat back in 2001 is of a totally different scale and nature, and we should recognize that, but not hyperventilate about it.
Well, and I want to pick up on that. You mentioned, of course, there's always the lone wolf idea, this solo, self-radicalizing extremist who can cause a lot of damage. But just to have said this, you also underscore that while David Cameron spoke of Al-Qaeda after the attack on the refinery, that was not an Al-Qaeda attack, and neither were the Mumbai attacks. You point this out as signs that Al-Qaeda is weakened.
I'm not saying there's no threat. There's clearly a threat. But the threat is much more diverse, much more fragmented, much more dynamic than simply saying, hey, these guys are all part of one global organization. We need to take out that global organization, and it will all go away.
But you also write that Osama bin Laden came along and unified disparate groups a few decades ago. So couldn't someone do that again? We'll ask Jason Burke, South Asia correspondent for The Guardian, after a break. Right now, we're asking you a question he poses as well. How do you feel about Al-Qaeda? Are you afraid? Let us know at hereandnow.org. Jason says that fear is one indicator of how strong the group is. But we have questions about that as well, and we will ask Jason in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Jason Burke, South Asia correspondent for The Guardian. His piece this week, Al-Qaeda, How Great is the Terrorism Threat to the West Now? Before the break, Jason was making the case Al-Qaeda has been weakened. There are now fragmented, loosely aligned groups with attacks in Algeria, fighters in Mali. But that is much like it was when Osama bin Laden came along decades ago. So, Jason, is it as simple as saying that if someone comes along that could unify those strands and have the money to fund them, as bin Laden did, could Al-Qaeda be strong again?
You could. You could have all sorts of other scenarios, too. And, I mean, we are in a very different place now from where we were back then, not least in terms of counter-terrorist capabilities. I mean, the various agencies that protect us have learned an enormous amount in the last 10 years about how to protect us, and they do it much better in many ways than they did before. So we're not in the same place. But you know, all you can say is that 9/11 came out of the blue in many ways. The next thing that comes along is going to be equally unforeseen or equally shocking. So it's very difficult to see exactly what that's going to be. And the long-term point is a really important one, because Islamic militancy predates bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was founded in 1988. There are lots of groups involved in various forms of Islamic militancy who were active previous to that, and certainly many who continued to be active independent of bin Laden throughout the 90s and even throughout the last decade. So where we are now is a little bit like the situation previously, where bin Laden had yet to conduct this campaign of drawing things together. It's very, very fragmented.
Well, one of the other areas you point to, we mentioned that you say that's not to say, all of what you're saying now is not to say that we shouldn't fear the lone wolf, this person who, you know, trains themselves. And you mentioned Mohamed Mira, the French Algerian who killed three troops and three Jewish school children and a teacher last March in France. But then you point out that the areas where these self-described Islamist jihadists trained are taking, instead of hundreds of candidates, it's now a trickle of dozens.
My point at looking at Mohamed Mira is to say that he's not really a lone wolf. He came from a background where there was a lot of extremism, a lot of extremist thought, and he too went to Pakistan and Afghanistan, got trained and came back. In many ways, that's the old pattern. That's not just some guy deciding he's going to get radicalized and go out and do something. And when you look at the number of people who are going up there now to the Pakistani-Afghan frontier, it was in the hundreds per year, even the thousands per year pre-2001, and now you're down to the dozens, certainly if you're talking about Westerners. So that's, the focus has shifted, but that does mean that that particular conduit, that channel through which a lot of very dangerous people were coming back to Europe, they were the people responsible for the 7/7 attacks in my hometown, London, that particular channel has largely been shut down.
Yeah. But you close your article with the question that perhaps was meant to soothe the reader, but it didn't me, because you say your final kind of point about, you know, maybe al-Qaeda is not the threat that it once was, is, you know, how do we feel? Do we feel more frightened? A, I don't think how I feel should be, you know, how we track terrorism, because I certainly wasn't at all frightened right before 9/11, didn't know anything. And, you know, I'm not sure I feel calm. I'm not sure I don't, you know, when we see these attacks happening all around the world, especially in Northern Africa, you just feel like there's a new arena opening up. So, you know, you say, you question the reader and say, do you feel frightened? I don't think you do. And that's another indication that there is less of a threat. Is that really how we should gauge the threat of terrorism?
I think there's a difference of perspective from the U.S. to Europe. If you were in Europe in the period of 04, 05, 06, that was a period where there were bombs going off in European capitals. There were large numbers of angry demonstrations. There was a genuine sense of crisis. There's a genuine sense of polarization. Iraq is not that far away. In 2006, you had people coming back from Iraq who'd been radicalized there and bombing things in London. There was a genuine sense in that period that things were going extremely badly and that we were under direct personal threat.
People were terrified.
People were frightened.
Yeah.
They're not now. And they're right not to be, because the difference is vast. In one absolutely critical point is that in 2004, 2005, across the Muslim world and among Muslim communities in the West too, the approval levels for bin Laden and al-Qaeda were really high. They range from 30, 40% up to 60, 70, 80% in some countries. 3 or 4 years later, and certainly now, those approval levels are down at historic low levels. So you've had an absolutely critical shift whereby in the last 6 or 7 years, hundreds of millions of people who saw bin Laden as a hero and saw al-Qaeda and its ideology as a way forward, as the right strategy to pursue, as justified, now don't. And now that is a massive strategic defeat for the extremists. And it's the thing that keeps us safer than anything else might do. Of course, there are militants. Of course, with the threat that could get nastier if we do nothing about it. But the critical shift is that the ideology was rejected by communities from Morocco to Malaysia, from Kazakhstan to Kenya. And that's absolutely critical. Without that mass support, it's a nuisance, with a possibility to execute infrequent, spectacular attacks. With that support, it becomes something much, much more dangerous. That support looked like it was going to exist. It doesn't exist now. That's key.
Well, in fact, we're reading today of villagers in a town in Mali guiding French troops to the al-Qaeda fighters there and cheering as they're being taken away. So that underscores your point, although, you know, people may still be a little nerve-wracked by all this. Jason Burke, South Asia correspondent for The Guardian. His books include The 9/11 Wars, Al-Qaeda, The True Story of Radical Islam. His article in The Guardian, Al-Qaeda, How Great is a Terrorism Threat to the West Now? We'll link you at hearandnow.org. Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So tomorrow on Here and Now, the man on whose plate Al-Qaeda could possibly be, President Obama's nominee for Secretary of Defense, former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, will take questions in the Senate. Do you have some you'd like to hear asked? Let us know at hearandnow.org. Latest news is next. Here and Now.